More coming in. This is not a seminar you have to be in. I hope you know that. This is really just if you're at a church where you're wanting to start a biblical counseling ministry at your church, that's really what this is for. So if you're not like thinking about that, then I'd go eat with my friends. Oh, so how to start it and then how to just keep it going and all that. So I'm just going to put this as fast as I can because I really want Q&A and I want to give Jeremy a chance for you guys to pop some questions in on Jeremy. Ask him some really hard questions that he won't be able to answer. That'd be fun. Okay. Okay. When you're going to start a biblical counseling ministry, you have to have your board and your pastoral staff on board. This can just be a controversial move because pretty much everybody you know is being brought up in the psychological world, you know, a secular view of things, of how man, how he has his problems, how to fix his problems and all that. And you can think you have your pastor on board, or you can think you have your elders on board, or your pastoral staff on board. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, we're good with sufficiency of scripture, biblical counseling. Of course. Who wouldn't want to do that? It's counsel from the Bible. It's simple. But then you find out a board member spent $100,000 on his child's master's degree in psychology, and they're all over Freud or Skinner or Maurer and all that. That's where the danger that I have seen lies more than anything. So I would just say take great pains to make sure that you know what you believe about biblical counseling personally, that your board is on board and your pastoral staff is on board before you launch into a ministry. Otherwise, I mean, you can counsel biblically without having a biblical counseling ministry. That's what we do, I hope, all of us, right? It's just the natural flow of life. But if you're actually going to start a ministry where you're having counseling, people come in to get counseling from counselors that you have trained, they meet in a room, and you've developed an actual ministry with a wait list and all that kind of stuff, if you're going to go down that road, you just got to get a few things. You got to get your ducks in a row, and that is the biggest one, I think. Secondly, is I say target a man to champion the ministry, and I say that because it's easier to get more guys in the ministry if there's a guy recruiting guys than a gal recruiting guys. It just is. That's not right or wrong. It just is. So you may be at a church where like, well, we don't have any guys, period. There's no guy to get guys because there's no guy at all, right? Okay, well, then you have a gal. You got to go with what you got, is my opinion. And I'm not talking about being an elder or a pastor. You're talking about launching a ministry. It can be overseen by a pastor where a lady is the one there that is kind of getting things going. Two-thirds of your counseling is women and counseling women anyways. So there's ways to do that without breaking what we understand 1 Timothy chapter 2 to be. It doesn't have to bust into that at all. But it is going to be helpful if you're going to build a ministry, right? If you're going to start a ministry, it is helpful if you have a guy to champion that. He didn't have to be paid. He doesn't have to be on staff per se at first. I think you need to know him really well and have a lot of confidence in him because he's going to be talking to a lot of people in a very personal way. And when a counselor is representing you as a pastor, he is representing you. So you got to make sure that people that you have assigned people to is going to say things that you would also agree with. I it's great if you got a guy. That is the way to do it. If you don't, then start with a gal. We'll take a lot of questions at the end of all this stuff. Develop a budget, even if it's super small. Even if it's a $1,000 budget, it's just to buy books for people. At least have something. Most of you probably have a budget where the church votes on the budget, something like that. It's nice for the church to see a line item that says biblical counseling ministry, $1,000. Because then some people are just like, they see numbers and like, oh, we're actually spending money on that. We're getting serious about that as a church. So I think it's good to have a budget, and you can build on it from there. If the ministry grows, then you can add to it. Refer to the ministry from the pulpit in the sermons, not just making announcements about it. Since it's counsel from the Bible, you should be counseling people from the pulpit. You're not just declaring truth. You're getting truth right down into the lives of people. It's reaching down into their hearts. It's meant to change people. So you don't have to, in the middle of a sermon, bust out with an announcement about biblical counseling. But it ought to be a natural flow of a pastor It just should breathe out of you. You know, it just, biblical counseling just breathe right out of a pastor. So he didn't really have to plan out an announcement. Announcements are great, but you don't have to plan that out. You can just, it'll just come out in the middle of your sermon. So anyway, the more you refer to it from the pulpit, the more people will gravitate towards that. Pulpit does have power. Senior pastor should announce, anoint the leader of the ministry in the church service. I think that's very helpful. Otherwise, they're like, okay, who's this guy or what's their training? But if you as a, if you're a senior pastor that's here, or if your senior pastor says, this is the guy that's going to lead our counseling ministry, and I trust this guy, your sheep will trust that guy a lot more than if the ministry just pops up on its own and you never say anything about it. He looks rogue, right? So anyways, those are in terms of starting your ministry. Now, I jumped fast on that. Okay, this, there's supposed to be a heading, keeping it going. Oh, you know what? I forgot. I'm so sorry. This, by the way, will be online recorded. I actually made some notes, but I only made 50 copies. I thought I was making way too many. So if we could like start passing these out. Pardon? You know, just take one per couple. If you're not with your spouse or a significant other, then, you know, just take one for you. Okay, so as while those are going around, target, we're talking about keeping the ministry going. So you've got it started. How do we build on it? How do we keep it going? It's always hard to find men to counsel. If you're a married woman, you already know that. It's just difficult. But when you think about it, okay, so 2/3 of the people that come for counseling are women, but some of those women are married to guys and they're coming too. Our policy as a church, if we're counseling a guy, it is a guy counseling a guy. We do not have women counseling men. I think that is a very bad idea. You guys agree with that? Okay. For the obvious reasons, right? If you're not sure why that's obvious, then please see me and I'll explain to you. So we don't have guys, gals counsel guys. We also don't have gals counsel a marriage. That doesn't mean there would never be a time where a woman would be helping a marriage out for a session. That does happen. So ladies, if you're counseling a gal and she's presenting her husband, however she's described him, he's stuck in pornography, or he's very mean about things or what have you. And you've been counseling with her for a while. You're probably thinking, it would be really nice to meet this guy, because all I'm hearing is her side of things. I'd like to know the guy. Adam, thank you for doing that. Okay, so how are you going to meet the guy? Are we going to have to bring in another counselor guy in and then bring that guy in? We've done that. But it would be a lot simpler if you just brought the guy in, one time meeting the couple and the female counselor, and then she can get back to counseling the gal. If you're going to meet with the guy, he's coming, then, and you're thinking, well, this might turn into marital counseling, at that point, I would have a male counselor in there at the same time. So you might as well, if you're thinking this might turn into marital counseling, then get the guy in, and then we can just start off with the four of us. That may be the only time you four of you meet. You may not need it, but at least you're ready if it does turn into that. Okay, so we don't have the gals counsel the guys. We don't have the gals counsel marriage. All right, so that means you have a guy involved quite a bit. He's at least doing 1/3 of guys who come by themselves. And if half the other people are marriages, he's doing another 1/3. You need men for this ministry. It's really hard to find them. But you don't have to have the Apostle Paul with you, right? You need guys that love the Lord, the old FAT, faithful, available, and teachable. That's, you just need somebody like that. You can train them up, and they don't have to be as knowledgeable as you are as a pastor, if you're a pastor, right? They just need to have a love for the Lord, an understanding of word, a love for the word, and a desire to be trained. If they have the desire to be trained, you can teach them, right? A lot of the counsel we give is very practical. It's not hidden in revelation, right? It's pretty simple stuff that people are reminded of. So most of the guys that you know probably can do this, but they don't have a heart for it. So if you don't have a guy that can help out, then start praying. If you have a guy and you need more guys, which I can just tell you right now, you will always need more guys. You just will. I have, Jeremy, we have 18 guys counseling now? 19?
Yeah.
Something like that? Guess what we need? More guys. Yeah. So How do you get them? It's probably one of your questions. How do you get more guys? We pray, obviously. We did something that I don't know that I would recommend doing, but we did it. I put an announcement on the bulletin. Because you never know what's going to come, right? Okay, so I know everybody's afraid of that sort of thing, and I get why. But I'll just tell you my testimony on that is I put the announcement out there. Four guys answered that call. One announcement, one Sunday, not from the pulpit, in the little bulletin. Four guys came to me. All four guys went all the way through the training process and counseled for me. Four for four. Praise God for that. All right, now I haven't done that since. Now we just get them one by one and two by two, and we're always thankful, and we always need more. So target men. The reason you don't have to target the women is because the women will come anyways. It's the way you are, right, ladies? You're just more naturally oriented toward this for the most part, so you don't really have to press out there and find women. They come. Okay, build with quality and slow. You don't need to do the flash announcement. We need 10 counselors, and we're starting our ministry next month. I would not recommend with that. I would recommend that you pick out a one person or two people that's in your church and then start training them and see if there's a cohesiveness there, and then just start training your church body more in terms of discipleship, and then you'll see people starting to come. It's very hard to make a good reputation, but it's very easy to lose it. Okay? Your reputation, you get one shot at it, and when you're building it, you can't get off on the wrong foot. So you don't have to do a splash. Just see how many super qualified people that you feel like you have and start there and then start building. Thirdly, decide on certification. So we're ACBC Certified Training Center, as you know. So we train lots of people from lots of other churches. I'm bigger on certification than I was when I started counseling. There is something that helps people know they know what they know. There's just something about that. It is going to, certification will broaden your knowledge and deepen your knowledge as well. And so then what you bring to the table in a counseling relationship is going to be broader and deeper in their life. So it's not just going to be, here's two verses, go home, be warm, and be filled. There's a lot more to it than that. You're getting that in the conference with all these great speakers, right? So to me, certification is very helpful. We do not mandate it. I encourage it, but I don't mandate it. We do our own training here that takes, we start in early September. We go through early May. We meet 31 times for an hour and a half. We teach the entire body that comes in. This room would be full on a Wednesday night. Out of this group that would be full, there might be 6, 7, or 8 people that come out and end up being counselors. So we take them through that 9-month period, 31 nights. They do homework. There's a ton of reading that goes along with it. We use the self-confrontation manual, which the rest of you have done as well. And then there's a couple other books they have to read. So they do a lot of training with us. And then we have 10 more weeks after that in late May all the way through the end of August. There's 6 weeks on kind of the nuts and bolts of how to counsel, which you all already got in fundamentals. You got good training in that. It's really good. And then the next 4 weeks, we spend a lot more time on the homework. We watch, you guys all watch Trey and Deb, and Trey and Deb part 2. We do the same thing. But then we do something different that I've never seen another ministry do. So I'll just tout this. This is one of the things I think we do the best of anything we do in all of our training. I love this. We bring in our current counselors, and we have our trainees. Our counselors play a counselee. So we have a trainee, and one of my counselors. They pair up, they go off to a room, they're given a profile beforehand, and they counsel for an hour. At the end of an hour, they get 10 minutes where the counselor can talk back to the trainee and give them some thoughts about their counseling, how it went, what they could improve on, and all that. And then we all come back together again in the big group in our large conference room, and we just go around the room and just talk about it. Like, how do you feel about how you did? Do you feel like this is you? Do you feel better about counseling or worse about counseling? Like an eye test, 1 or 2. Good or bad? More comfortable, less comfortable? I'm really hoping that they just learn about themselves and counseling, and to see, I am very interested in the Lord moving them to do this, not me and not Jeremy, not our pastor. It needs to come from within them. So I'm very much, I think on one occasion, I really pushed someone to be a counselor here in 20 years. Everyone else, they kind of came on their own. The Holy Spirit just dragged them in. Yes.
How early on did you do this? It's like six weeks in after they've gone through.
Yeah, how early on? So you got the 31 weeks, you got 6 weeks of going through the manual, and then you've got 2 weeks on, there's the videos that are sprung in between, and it's the last 2 weeks. So this is the last thing they do before we put them into a counseling room with somebody where they observe.
Okay.
They're not there to talk, they're not there to counsel, they're just there to watch, listen, learn, take notes, and all that. And they'll start at the beginning of the counseling relationship, like the very first meeting, and stay with them. Most of them want to stay with them until it's done. That can take 6 months, unfortunately. So your training starts in September. By the time you're actually given a counselee, it's almost 2 years. So they're doing other things. I mean, they're still reading and gaining knowledge, coming to the NCT. They're all still growing during all this period. And it's all part of, I think, the Holy Spirit just shaping them into making sure this is where they're going to use what they've been taught. Because you can be a discipleship group leader. You can work with youth. There's a lot of different paths to use the things that you get in this. It doesn't have to be in a counseling room. So I really want to make sure that they do this. Back to certification. Sorry. Did I answer your question right, Jamie?
Yes.
Okay. So the certification, I recommend it. I don't demand it. With all the work they go through here, they've already done over 250 hours of training. So they don't need to go around that way, but I really like it if they do. Okay, aim at being a church that thinks this way, not just a church that has a ministry that does this. If it doesn't breathe out of the pulpit and breathe out of every ministry in your church, it will look like its own little separate 501c3 corporation that does counseling on the side. And all the problems in the church, they go over here to that ministry. We don't do that over here. That's how it'll be unless it just breathes right out of your elders, your staff. Like, this is the way the church thinks. Right? If your whole church thinks this way, the ministry you'll be amazed at what God does in people's lives. If it's a separate little ministry, that's all it'll be. So you're out, your elders and your pastoral staff, everybody needs to be thinking that this is the way we do things. We counsel one another. Okay, I want to get to questions, so I want to fly through these. Get to know other churches and their ministries. Rob them of their experience and their materials. Everybody stands on the shoulders of somebody else, right? We didn't invent this thing. Right? And our forms, I didn't invent our forms. Jay Adams and other people in some of my coursework, I took what they had and reshaped or rewrote a little bit to fit more of ours, or maybe updated something. But really, I mean, I don't know who made it up before them, or maybe they made it up. I don't know. But I didn't. So you can take anything we have. It's yours. And most of it is already on the website. So you can just copy and paste right from the website. If you want to get some other things that maybe aren't on the website, you have other questions, then you can ask Jeremy. I'm also available, so it doesn't have to be just him. He's going to be a very busy boy if 94 churches are calling him all the time, so he'll be a busy boy. Okay, take your people to biblical counseling conferences like this. This is a great place for you to bond with the people that are doing ministry together. Is Nancy in here? I don't see Nancy around. Nancy was here from the very beginning, and Candy is around but not in here as well. They don't need to be. Those two and three others, there were five women and me, started together, went off to a conference in, after all the training, went to a conference in June, then went to another conference in August, and a year later we went to our first ACBC, which was NANC, went to their annual conference, and during those conferences, we really bonded as a group. And we stayed together until one of those five left about 5 years ago. So we counseled together for about 15 years. That's a really, to me, that's a really neat thing. It's hard to find anyone who's in any ministry for 15 years, right? But all six of us were there together. And going to the conferences, listening to the same talks, going to dinner, going to lunch, having breakfast, all of that created a real bond that we formed. And when we did all that, our church, as we were building that, Our church had integrated counseling here. That's a completely different form, right? So there was definite conflict with what we were doing, what they were doing. And I mean, it hit the fan eventually through women's ministries. That happens a lot, huh? What happened was a couple of my female counselors got brought into women's ministries, to the council that runs women's ministries. So they were moved over there. And when they got there, they found out there were some things going on that weren't exactly where we would be at with biblical counseling. And so that had to rise up to a pastoral level where decisions had to be made. So we were bonding during this time when the church was going through big changes. We were also going through doctrinal changes, bigger picture issues. And it was very, very helpful. So if you can just keep coming to conferences like this, or go back to the national conference at ACBC, they move it around the country. It's usually kind of in the Midwest somewhere. I think next year it's at, is it this year that's at Jacksonville? Is anybody going this year, the annual conference? Where's it at?
Jacksonville.
It is Jacksonville, right, at Heath's Church, right? Okay, and then the next year, they were talking about bringing it back here, but I said we weren't going to be ready for that. So do you know where they probably haven't announced it yet. Yeah. A couple of years from now, I'll be back here, but not yet. So they rotate that. It's a fun trip. It costs a little bit of money. That's never actually been a problem. It's never stopped us from going to the conference. We have a small little budget that we help people out with, and then people share rooms. There's four people in one car or five people in a car. You go to the conference, there'll be a van, and it's like Monty Python. There's like 1,000 people come out of the car. So, you know, there's ways to make things happen if you do your flights well in advance. The price is a whole lot lower than if you do it in the last second. So if you plan well ahead, you can keep your cost down. It's not too bad. So anyways, I would commend to you, go away to conferences. Keep building that friendship. Start building your resource list. So I'm talking about the books you're recommending, the CDs, the websites, all the different informational stuff that we have now that's so available that wasn't available. Start building that now and collecting that information. We have a resource list. If you want that resource list, Cheryl is right there, and you can ask Cheryl. You all can get to Cheryl, right? You just go to the North Creek website, find biblical counseling, email her, say, hey, can you please send me your resource list? No problem. When you get to five counselors, I think you need administrative help at that point. I don't remember. I think it was probably around five when Nancy started not only counseling but helping me out administratively. It's just keeping track. It's pushing papers. It's helping with appointments. Things just kind of start to multiply. Every counseling situation is different, and it's often not just you and the counselee. It often involves a third party, whether it's a counselor or a family member. Things kind of start to grow. If you've already been counseling, or if you're a pastor, you know these things are not very often simple one-on-one for 8 weeks and we're done. It just starts to gobble up time more than an hour a week. So at some point in time, it came to the five counselors part where I needed, and she worked, I think she gave me like 10 hours a week, and that's sort of built. And now Cheryl, you're getting 24 or 5 hours a week, and Lori Agnello does all of our first-time appointments with the ladies, and so she's probably doing three appointments a week, something like that. Probably takes her 4 or 5 hours, maybe. Yeah, depends on the week. And then she also does counseling as well. So between the two of them, we probably have 30 hours, and then as the pastor over that, the administrative. There's just a lot of administrative work that goes on when you're administrating this stuff. So I don't know what the exact number is. For me, it was when I got to five counselors, I needed administrative help. Not a lot, just a little. And then if it keeps growing, it keeps growing. See what God does. Offer the training you used out to the whole church. So that's where I said in the class that we have in the early part of September. That initially was just my five gals that ended up counseling with me and me walking through the self-confrontation manual together. Then we offered that out to the church as just general discipleship. The first go around was to be a counselor. And then it was just to generally disciple, because the self-confrontation manual is rich with discipleship. It's the best, to me, the best discipleship tool I've ever seen. So I just jumped on it as soon as I saw it. We still use the same manual, and we offered it out to the church, and like 17 people came that first time, and then there was 45, and then there was 65, and now there's, I don't know, is there 200 in the class on Wednesday night? And it's been that way for years. It just, I can't explain it. A lot of other churches come as well. It's mostly our people, but there's a lot of other churches that do send people. I say to offer it out to the whole body, because you're trying to disciple the whole body. And counseling is just another form of discipleship. It's a more specific, you know, acute, not chronic, if you want to use a medical term. But it still is, you know, one beggar helping another beggar find food, just teaching someone to follow the Lord. So we offer the same principles that are good for a counselee. Everybody here is a counselee. So anyways, we offered it out to everybody, and it's gone really, really well. Have quality materials to offer your counselors and counselees. So that's your resource list. Build on that. When your counselors come to you and say, hey, can I add this book to our resource list? Okay, I want to, if I know the author and he's ACVC certified, I'm not going to review the book. I know it's good. If it's somebody that I'm not as familiar with, then I'm going to want to review the book and maybe talk to the person. I've turned a few books away, but not very many, because most of the time our people are sharp enough to where they know. But occasionally I'll get one and I'm like, you know, there's enough in this book that I don't think we need to do that. Sometimes they'll get a book recommended. It's a really good book on fear. Eh, we already have two books on fear. We don't need another one. You know, just, we do have a book resource thing in our office, a big shelf with all kinds of books that we give out to our counselees and our counselors. But we can't keep adding books. We're not a library, and our bookstore is downstairs, so there's plenty in there. All right, so those are some things I wanted to, you know, how do you get it going, and then how do you keep it going or grow it and all that. I want to bring Jeremy up, because Jeremy is going to be the new dude. And it's I have to tell you, it's a lot more boring what I'm doing now. It is definitely different. So, Jeremy, why don't you give people a chance to know who you are? And I want to make sure we give them at least a break for 15 minutes. So we got 6 minutes. We can answer questions, but can you give like a 2-minute testimony?
Okay, yeah. I grew up at this church. My parents came here when I was one, came up from Southern California. Grew up at this church, was trained by this church, went to school at Cal Poly and for construction management. Flirted with the idea of going into full-time ministry at that time, just felt like the Lord was not opening up that door. Although pastoral ministry and was something I felt like I was gifted for, and I was moving my way in that direction, so I wanted to equip myself with that, even though vocationally the door hadn't opened yet. Started seminary in 2007, got married in 2005, now have two boys, and so I worked for about 15 years in the construction field while serving here. So I was full throttle in the workforce, the secular world there, and then serving here. So I teach here since 2007, just been growing with various ministries. I've been teaching here in various capacities, and I've been doing men's ministries for 8 years. And then Steve approached me a couple years ago, and real casually at first, just, what do you think about biblical counseling? And I'm not going to be here forever, and that kind of thing. So it was a growing, just with personally, it was like, Lord, is this maybe what you're having for me? Is this what you got for me in store? And full time, is it coming? And several years had passed with working through some of the details there. And then so I've been on staff here now for a month and no longer in construction. So I don't know how many people go from tractors to ministry, but I did. And I'm glad to be here.
Tractors to ministry. I went from trading to ministry.
There you go. Yeah. I was dirtier than you were.
I worked with a lot of dirt, though.
Yeah.
It's just dirty guys.
Yeah. My wife's happy that I come home clean.
There's a lot
clean,
of pagans so. In the finance ministry. Mostly. Okay, so the purpose of this is how to get it going and how to keep it, you know, build it. Here's some questions.
Do you recommend advertising it, or is it just word of mouth? Ha!
Do you recommend advertising it or word of mouth? Great question. We built it word of mouth, but that was kind of like the internet really wasn't even hardly going. It's 1998. You know, I'll tell you, don't put it on the internet until you are ready for the barrage. You will get calls for sure. And then you help out one person who's maybe 5 miles away, and they have a group of friends, and you help them, their group of friends know. What do you think the odds are that one of those group of friends is next? So it starts to mushroom. That's what's happened here. Every year I get another 4 or 5 counselors, and I think, okay, no more wait list. We have a wait list, Cheryl?
It doesn't go away.
So yeah. I would not put it out. I would not advertise until you are comfortable, you have the right people in place, and enough people in place. Yeah.
So how many counselees does a counselor take?
How many counselees does a counselor take? That can be from 1 to 3. I would not recommend going more than that. It will happen because there's emergencies. But if the person doesn't have a job, they can probably handle 3. If they have kids, they have a job. Raising those kids is not going to happen. It's really going to depend on your life situation. So 1 to 3 is pretty much it. As a pastor, when I started this, John said, don't have more than 4. I never had less than 4. I was so disobedient.
I think it also, there's certain people that counseling is their ministry. That's how they want to serve. That's where they're gifted. They're all in. So you have 3.
That was my second question.
Okay.
Yeah,
because
as far as spiritual gifting goes, do you fit it under exhortation, encouragement? Do you have that kind of filter that you're trying to get people as counselors to be?
All the above. Yeah, I don't think you have to have the gift of administration to be a counselor. It can be helpful, but it's not, you don't need that. But you do need to be gifted along the lines of encouragement, exhortation, and teaching, wisdom, those sort of things. Yeah, I think it's very helpful.
Yeah.
I don't think you have to be gifted at it to be a counselor, but it is certainly helpful. Yeah.
Do you have grief counseling as a part of the whole, or is that a separate?
So we counsel just about everything except the, when you get into the neurological and drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. We don't do that. So grief would be like anything else. We don't have a separate grief ministry. I've had a lot of people over the years ask for that. So we don't have that specifically, but it's part of what we all do. Yeah.
In general, I think you hit this in your videos when we were going to the self-confirmation manual. From start to finish, say it's mushrooming out, but from start to finish in a counseling session, how many weeks does it take?
10 to 12 weeks of meetings. Your meetings won't meet every week. Some of the ladies are able to do that, but the guys are never every single week for 10, 12 weeks. If you could, that's what it would be, but there's going to be breaks, vacations, et cetera, somebody sick, surgeries, whatever. So 10 to 12 sessions, the bell shape would be like that. There's a few that are going to be 3 or 4 weeks, and there's a few that are going to be 20 weeks, but most of them are going to be that 10 to 12. Some of that is not just dependent on the counselee. Some of that's dependent on the counselor. They build a nice little friendship, which is great, except there's people on the wait list. So, okay. Ladies first.
Did I understand you to say that you have someone who meets with all the counselees first before they, so it's not just intake paperwork and assign them to a counselee. Someone has that first meeting?
So for the ladies right now, I don't know if you're going to continue or not, but we do. Lori does it for the ladies, and I've not been doing it for the guys for a number of years. What are you going to do?
What we are now talking through with Lori is abandoning that plan. No, I'm just kidding.
That's okay. I don't care. Not my problem.
The young whippersnapper knows what to do. Yeah. If there is no waiting list, I personally don't see the help, how it would be helpful to have an intake. Because in that intake with the woman, you're giving them something to do. You're giving them some hope, some encouragement. Hey, why don't you do this week? And then you turn around and you give them to a counselor who maybe wants to go after something else first and could maybe not be helpful. But if there's 7, 8 different ladies on the waiting list, yeah, I mean, they're hurting, so they need some help. So, yeah, you meet with them. You don't get the full story like you would from a normal counselor, the normal first session, but you just get a general idea. I see what you're going through. It's very difficult. This is what we're gonna find someone for you. In the meantime, here's some resources, some things you should be reading. Have you considered this within our church? Come to this and give them a little bit of help so they're not waiting for so long with just paperwork.
Okay. So you're not going to do the whole first session.
No, even then. I mean, I don't sit in on all of them, but I sat in on some to know that it's a truncated version of that first session.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
What do you do with drugs and alcohol?
Yeah.
Next question.
I think. No, I.
Seriously.
Say no.
No, I'm glad he's asking, because you said we don't do it. It's not totally true.
Not totally true, but.
Lots of people are on drugs and deal with alcohol.
So I've sent two different people away. One of them to a Christian camp in, I want to say, Tennessee. Sent a gal away. Helped her parents get her to a facility down in Dana Point, Doheny Beach, connected to Calvary Chapel. That worked out very, very well. First one did not, but it wasn't the fault of the organization. It was the fault of the guy. So I've resorted to sending those sort of things out. I mean, if you're somebody that's in front of you and they're, like Kevin was describing in the first session this morning, you're not talking to a person anyways. They're not hearing anything you're saying. They're out there. So it's moot when it's that extreme. When it's not extreme and they're just, I shouldn't say just. Smoking pot is different than meth, correct? Okay. So there's varying degrees of it. Somebody smoking pot, we'll talk about that. They're drinking, we'll talk about that. But if they're addicted and constantly high, there's nothing we can do. And so I've sent them a couple of different places. I am always looking for something better or similar. So if you all have places that you trust, then we all want to know that. Solid Christian guys. There's actually two groups in the Midwest that I would trust in this area. Yes. Adult development.
Yeah, with disabilities, autism, Down syndrome, any of that. You don't deal with any of those.
Yeah, not to my knowledge.
Mm-mm.
That's my ministry.
My daughter's also. Yeah, she's a BCBA.
Not because there's not a need,
right.
But just because
it's not
just haven't, yeah. There was another.
Yeah. Oh, sorry.
There's one over here. She's waiting.
Okay, these two, and then we'll give you guys. You guys can take a break anytime you want.
I noticed number three was decide on your certification. Can you go ahead and get started in the process of this certification, or does someone really need to be certified before you launch it?
No, they can counsel. I don't want to give hoops for people to disciple other people. Okay, so they can be discipling and working on their certification, or not. We do not require it. You know, your question is, how do you know when to move them when someone's in over their head? I don't think that's been a problem.
Yeah.
When you're in over your head, it's pretty obvious. You're in over your head. It's like jumping in the ocean and you think it's easy, and then you get in there and the waves are like, oh no, I'm gonna die. You know, I don't think our folks have been to that place where I'm not sure if I'm in over my head. They've been, all been.
The situation
I think I am. No, you're asking if the situations have been more complicated than trained?
Yes.
Yes.
That's what I'm asking.
But that happens in a lot of other areas as well. I don't know how many of you feel like you're ready to handle an anorexic, but you can. Because the general principles that guide our life are the same. Then there are specific things about something like anorexia and cutting and drugs and alcohol that are more specific. So I would not say that... That's like our forte, going that deep into things. And that's when I've always told my counselors, if you feel like, I'm not sure, then come see me. And then
take it
from there.
And they're turning in reports after each meeting. And so you're reading that. So I'm watching, or Steve is watching, and you can see it unfolding. Sometimes they'll put questions there, and you can see, okay, this is what I need to keep an eye on. Those are the phone calls that you get. So I think they know pretty early when they're in over their head.
I feel like I'm always in over my head. I mean, really, there's some of the things that people get involved in, like, you're just not ready for everything, you know, but there is a readiness that's there because you love the Lord, you love the word, you have it in your heart, you just need to get into the deep end of the pool.